This is a special episode of Star Wars in Character.
What?
The podcast that takes a closer look at some of the characters from the Star Wars universe you probably never noticed.
Yes, I know.
And now, here are Chris and Tim with their very special guest.
Hey, everybody. We are back with actually our first ever interview for Star Wars in Character. Oh, those many, I guess it's been about a year and a half now since we first talked to Steven. But we are here with Steven Stanton, the voice of Meeber Gascon and Captain Tarkin on Star Wars The Clone Wars animated series.
I'm very proud to be here. I can't even talk today. All the D-Squad has got my head all a-Twitter.
There he is, Meeber. I'm also here with Chris. I know we haven't introduced Chris. Chris is here too.
Hello there. I am Chris. Steve, it's great to talk to you.
Hi, Chris. Good to talk to you again too. Yeah.
Now, I've been dying to do this because back when we put out that first interview with Steven, it actually came out as the Steven Stan interview part one. When we did our interview with Steven all those months ago, we just kept talking afterwards, and we had like a full extra hour of conversation afterwards. And we had initially planned on putting that out as a separate episode, but it didn't work on its own. So we are now 18 months later. We are finally we're finally doing a part two with Steven. So that's really probably
for the best. Those jam sessions don't always make a whole lot of sense to people who weren't there.
No. Now since we last talked to Steven, he has had two major story arcs, not including the Captain Tarkin arc, which was what we initially talked with him about. He has had two major characters show up on the Clone Wars. The first being Moralo Evol. Steven, what can you say about that character?
Ah, yes, good old Uncle Moralo.
Yeah, that was back in season four. I think about this time last year in season four. That was a great arc to be involved with. This is now this arc and the one with Meeber Gascon were both written by the same person, Brent Friedman. And I've been very lucky to have been cast in arcs that Brent has written because he writes such great stuff. He's got great characters and great dialogue. So the Moralo Evol arc to start with. Really interesting that they put in that such a strange character. When I, most of the time when I go in to do one of these things and I'm booking a new character, I have no idea A, what the character looks like, and B, how many episodes it's going to be. So it's always a real pleasure to walk into the studio and find out, oh, this is script one of four. Ooh. So you know you're going to be back for a lengthy story arc, which really gives you time to, you know, to dial in the character. You know, when you have just one session, it's tough to do a lot with a character to build or grow the personality. But when you have a four-story arc like we did with that one, you know, you're able to really develop the character and have a lot of fun with it. Another thing that was great about that particular arc, Corey Burton and I were talking that it was just all criminals. It was all bad guys. It was like the old Warner Brothers gangster movies with Jimmy Cagney or Humphrey Bogart. You know, it had that kind of a feel to it. And I remember Corey saying like, oh, I saw last week's episode. I mean, that was just, it's great, all that bad guy dialogue. You know, these guys are so evil and villainous. And like, yeah, it was just so much fun to do. You know, even James had to, you know, portray a bad guy in that one.
Yeah.
So it's all villains all the time.
What did you enjoy more, doing that story arc or reading children books as Uncle Evol?
That was the children's books are, you know, an entity unto themselves. They kind of, even Brent thought those things were hilarious. He never thought he'd see that character go in that direction. But the kids, little kids really seemed to latch on to it. Uncle Moralo was not as scary as just plain old killer Moralo Evol. So, you know, kind of found that balance there between the two personalities. But he's a lot of fun. The Moralo Evol definitely lends himself to comedic situations if you want to put him into that, you know, apart from just being, you know, incredibly nasty.
Well, what's weird is I actually played a few of those for my son Luke, and he just stares. Like, he stares at, like, he's just staring, like, I think I like this, but I've seen the character, and I'm afraid. You know what I mean?
The whole idea of Merala Evolves bedtime stories were the last thing you really wanted to listen to before you tried to go set yourself down to a peaceful sleep. More than likely, they'd give you nightmares, you know?
Good point.
For the voice of Merala, who did you base it on? That sounds a little Kirk Douglas to me, but...
I've heard a lot. It wasn't really based on any one person in particular. You know, when I reach into that... the sort of bag of magic tricks in my brain when I'm looking for voices, you know, every sort of past voice that I've ever heard, you know, little bits of that, you start pulling them up and massaging it and, you know, moving into different places until you get what you think you're looking for. You know, I've heard everything from Kirk Douglas to Kelsey Grammer. People thinking that it was based on it's not any real one person that it's based on. It's just more like this. You know, once again, when you audition for Clone Wars, because of the high, you know, confidentiality stuff that they've got going on, you don't get to see, you know, the character in advance. That's really unusual. Most of the time you work on animation, when you get your sides, you know, the copy that you're auditioning with, you get a drawing of what the character looks like. So you have an idea of, you know, the physical form and how that might affect the voice. You know, it's just that kind of a day. You know?
I was like, maybe
just like that, it just pops out of nowhere, and then boom. That was kind of a My Little Pony or Rainbow Bright sort of Strawberry Shortcake-ish kind of voice thing. There. But you know, Asheville. You kind of go with the flow and just. Give it your best shot. That's all you can do. And then, you know, it's sent to, people like Dave Filoni, George Lucas, whoever else is involved in casting that episode. And they think, is this what we have in mind? Is this voice what we're hearing when we look at the character? You know,
So when you were doing the Merala, when you came up with the voice, like Stephen, Dave Filoni wasn't in the room. Like he wasn't like, oh, that's great.
Awesome. Not when I was auditioning. No, I do that from either my agent's office or, you know, more than likely with Mike. So I usually do it from my home studio. When you get to the session, if they want to change it then Dave will talk to you and give you a little bit more information about it. Or he just says, leave it alone. Exactly. It's perfect just the way it is. Just, you know, do it the way you did it in the audition. And sometimes there's a long break between the audition and when you record, so most of the time they have your audition there. So they say, remember this thing that you did for us, you know, months ago.
Do it again.
Right, exactly.
Those were great episodes. And as you said, I loved all the bad guys. They introduced a whole set of new bounty hunters. Star Wars, people love bounty hunters. So it was really great to see these new bounty hunters and assassins. And actually, we've seen some of those character models pop back up. So every time they introduce a new character in there with a new look, I always love it because they just start adding those characters to the background and everything. So that was one of the great things about that is we got a whole lot of new great character models and looks that they were able to add into future episodes.
Even though some of them turned into cannon fodder in that in the box. You know?
Yes.
My favorite was the Odd Job bounty hunter with the big frisbee hat. I don't know what his name was. He was one of my favorites.
From those, I don't remember who that was.
Yeah, real huge frisbee hat.
Yeah, and they had, and I can't remember. I'm going to say the wrong. I'm not going to even try to say the names because I'll see like Enbo or one of those guys like that. They did have the two twins in there. The one that stole Cad Bane's hat assassinated him on the spot to get his hat back. Yeah. Well, that was also the episode where they went to the to Pablo's pawn shop.
Yes.
They found Indiana Jones's fedora was sitting on the shelf.
I rewound that like four times. That was so cool.
That was a big deal when that happened. When they showed that they had Cad Bane pop the hat on. It's like, yeah, not for me.
And you know, I know I probably talked about this before, but that just reminded me. There was when Corey had to say Pablo's Pawn Shop in Cad Bane's voice. a few people, the cast members, started to get the giggles, and Dave Filoni was asking, was like, well, why are you guys laughing? Because they said, well, it sounds like he's saying Pablo's Porn Shop. So you'll notice that when Corey says it, he really drags out the porn shop, because in order to make sure that everybody knows they're not going to, like, you know, an adult bookstore or something.
Yeah, I mean, it would work, too. I mean,
there's, I suppose, no, there's some pretty seedy places in the Star Wars universe, you know.
Now, and this season, and we just finished it up just a few weeks ago, the littlest big character you've ever done, Colonel Meeber Gascon.
Yes.
What now? What can you? How was that described to you? I know you said that you didn't know who Morello Avalo looked like when you did. Did they explain to you who Meeber was when
no,
you went
and
into-
this is a perfect case, and they knew what they were doing on this, because had they described the character, they would have gotten a lot of auditions that they didn't want, because here's the way the audition came. It just simply said, this is like, you know, I don't even think it had his name. It just said, like, the colonel or the general, he's a military man. And then they had like a full page of dialogue, which is really unusual for Clone Wars. They usually don't have, you know, that much dialogue for just a single character. So I just played it straight. I played it like, you know, like I was doing somebody like Patton or, you know, one of these kinds of characters. And, you know, just, you know, it was just, you know, like, we're going to do this and we're going to be there and we're going to conquer and capture and all, you know. It was, and then when I got to the session, that was when they showed me, okay, this is what your character looks like. He's this little tiny alien guy. And then Dave said, I want you to do what you did in the audition, and I want you to, like, multiply it by 10. He says, I want you to make it even bigger, because what they really wanted was the contrast of the big overcompensating guy.
It really was a great arc. I know that you know, if you pay attention to some of the things online, there was some positive and negative comments on it, but I really enjoyed it. I liked the we sort of have this idea that everything needs to be dark and gloom and doom, and I actually really liked the levity in these episodes. I thought that these were some of the best acted, honestly. And I know you and I'm blanking on the name of the guy who did the pit droid,
Ben Diskin.
I thought you guys did such a phenomenal job, and I guess it was a four episode arc, and each episode was so different. They it all had the same levity, but they all had, like, a very different story and a very different theme throughout the episode. So to be able to be in such a far-reaching arc as that one was, I thought it was a fantastic arc.
Thank you. I, you know, because Ben and I worked really hard on that, because many times, you know, with the exception of the addition of D. Baker in the room, it was just he and I together. I mean, and Dave would say, like, I remember when we came in to do the second episode, A Sunny Day in the Void, you know, Dave said, okay, you guys, it's all on you today. You're the only two characters that talk in this entire episode, you know, that speak a language that humans can understand anyway. Okay? And they did cover a lot of ground with that arc, you know, everything from that sort of existential episode of Sunny Day in the Void to the action-packed final episode, you know, with, you know, Tarkin's in there, Jedi cruisers are, you know, Imperial, whatever they're calling them at this point, the cruisers are blowing up. You know, it's just, I thought the fourth episode really was, you know, so Star Wars-y in so many ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, I agree with you guys in the sense that, I remember when I saw the first Star Wars, and then when I went to see Empire Strikes Back, and, you know, a lot of people left that movie saying, like, wow, it's such a dark ending. It's so, like, not what the last one was. I mean, it was good. It was great. It was excellent. But it didn't end up on that up note, which, you know, people kind of forget. It's like Star Wars was very, you know, why do you think they called it A New Hope? You know, there was definitely the good versus the evil, but there's definitely a lot of laughs in Star Wars. Whether it's between R2 and 3PO, or, you know, Han Solo and his malfunctioning spaceship, the Falcon, and, you know, there's just all kinds of levity scattered throughout. It's not a complete dark, you know, somber story. Yeah. It's the old swashbuckling sort of Errol Flynn, Flash Gordon, all that kind of stuff. You know, it was, you know, emulating the serials from the 1940s. things, you know.
Right. Did the name R. Lee Ermey come up at all while you were doing?
No, nobody really talked about that. I mean, I wasn't particularly trying to do, you know, something, because actually I was trying to stay away from doing a character that was shouting all the time.
Right.
Because he was so boisterous, I thought that's going to get old really quick if all I do is just bark every line.
Right.
So I tried to, you know, bring him down and to get him like, you know, that's your pilot. You know, he would just, instead of shouting everything, I would do like sometimes the opposite, like, and he was internalizing, like he was just exasperated. He didn't even have the energy to yell anymore. So I tried to mix it up like that, since he was the person that was talking most of the time. It was either he or, you know, the colonel or Whack. And, you know, you wanted to make it so just aurally, and I'm saying that, you know, A-U-R-A-L, aurally speaking, you know, when you hear it, it wasn't just like a drone of this yelling that was going on. So right. You didn't want people to tune him out.
Right, right.
The character animation, I know that's not your department, but they did such a great job. I mean, you did a really good job with his voice and with the jokes and the humor there. But they did a lot of really fun sight gags, like with his expressions and his movements. And I thought it was just a really well rounded character that they put out there. So I honestly hope that we see some more of him, and so I'm going to petition that he's in episode 7.
Well, you know, who knows, with Disney taking over and them wanting to do these sort of like side movies and stories and tell, who knows? I mean, I think it would be perfect for something with kids in it, because a lot of the kids liked the Colonel, you know, despite that some of the adults didn't care for him at all. But, you know, and I agree with you that some of the animation, like when he covers his eyes, he has to grab each eyeball on the stock with a one-handed piece to cover his eyes. And how much some of that stuff, you know, you never know how much they get from you, because when you're doing a new character, they put a video camera in the room and they videotape you while they're while you're performing. So in case you're doing, you know, gesturing with your hands or body movements, they get to see, okay, what was the actor doing with their body in order to get that particular, you know, line out. And sometimes they, you know, they'll take that and use that as a guideline, or you just use something completely that the actor did and put it in there, and you know, it comes onto the screen. But, you know, that works. I mean, it makes sense.
It's great. For our listeners who have not seen any of the episodes that we've talked about, I highly recommend going back and checking them out. Morallo of All, that's available now. I think season 4 is out on DVD. I haven't picked that up yet, but the Morallo of All, those episodes are out there. Some of these might still be on StarWars.com, so you might be able to go and check out a few of these of the Gascon ones. So I do hope that those listening will go and check out these episodes if you have not seen them yet.
Yeah, I think they're also, they've been putting them on Amazon and iTunes in places that too.
I think so, yeah.
So now Disney, we got to talk about that real fast.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that? I know you have worked with Disney. I mean, you are one of the voices of the parks, and you've done a lot of different projects for them in terms of games and animated series and things of that sort. Did that come as a surprise to you?
Well, I think it certainly wasn't something that I was expecting to hear, but once I heard it, it made, you know, perfect sense. I mean, Star Wars has been part of the Disney, you know, theme park since 1986, I think it is, when Star Tours came in there, and that was the first time they had a non-Disney, you know, property on the on the Disney grounds. They'd never had a, you know, anything to do with a movie that wasn't Disney, Star Wars, you know. But you could see even back then they thought, well, this is a perfect fit for what Disney mm-hmm. does. So I think it's great. And I mean, for the longest period of time, you know, Clone Wars has been kind of keeping the flame alive. And now, you know, with the announcement, look at all the projects that are being announced. Everybody's wish come true, you know.
it's kind of sad, because the older that we're getting, there's going to be so much stuff out there that we got to try to stay healthy. you know what I mean? And don't smoke, don't drink, so you can last longer, so you can see all these episodes and the spinoffs. It's so exciting, I think, for all of us.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's so many, you know, George Lucas has, you know, his, from what I understand, you know, the amount of notes that he has taken on this and the stuff that he's expanded on himself is, you know, it's astronomical. You know, they always are going to that mine to get things for Clone Wars. And so I can only imagine the kinds of, you know, material that's already there, practically ready to go, you know. And so, you know, I think it's great. I think it'll go for a long, long time.
Oh, yes.
I think it's great that every day there's something new coming out. It really is the most exciting time for a Star Wars fan. I used to think that nothing could get better than those days leading up to Episode One. But I think we're really in a time where it's just so exciting. There's just so much possibility out there coming up in the next. I would say we might even see some really lasting effects maybe in the before Episode 7 comes out. I'm that's what I'm really hoping for.
Well, you haven't seen the end of this season's Clone Wars yet.
Oh, wait, well, there we go.
Starting in the next few weeks. Starting next week. Yeah.
Is this where Jedi Mickey jumps out?
No, nothing like that. But okay. This is definitely, you know. Yeah, just tune in. That's all I can say. You know, tune in. It's going to be really good.
I was actually telling Tim before we called you is that these last, like, Darth Maul and Savage Opress and Sidious, they're just it's simply amazing. I still have it on my DVR because it's so good to watch over and over and over again. And it's really going to get better.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, there's definitely a lot of crazy wild stuff in these last few episodes and.
I can't wait.
Has Kathleen Kennedy popped by any of the sessions, or are we not allowed to talk about that? I'm not sure.
Well, she hasn't been at any of the sessions that I've been at, but I don't know. Okay. If, you know, never can tell.
Now with Episode 7 coming up, have you? I know they're going to be casting that soon. Have you sent Kathleen a fruit basket with a headshot and a demo reel?
No, I'm sure they all know who I am. So, you know, if they want me, they'll call me. If you know, yeah, the Goodyear
a fruit basket wouldn't hurt. it's Valentine's Day. You can send her a heart shaped box of candy.
I'll send her, you know, maybe a Meeber Gascon or something like that.
There you go.
He can fit into any scene in the background.
Yeah,
he can.
And again, I got to ask this, as for those who have heard Steven's first interview with us, Steven had done a lot of work in effects work. Now, if you were to get the call, if someone was to call you up and say, hey, Steven, how would you like to work in the effects, you know, with ILM on one of these films, would you put the gloves back on and jump back into effects, or is that
special effects? It's been so long since I've done that. I don't even know how they're doing it anymore. So other than I know computers are involved. I mean, it's gone way yeah. past when I was involved. You know, those people are artists in their own right, and I'll stick to what I do best and let them do what they do best.
All right. Well, yeah, I know with ILM, they disbanded their physical effects department, which I personally think that was kind of a mistake. But there's still a few groups out there. So if they need physical effects, White Room Artifacts, and there are a few other companies out there that might be able to step in to do that sort of stuff. So.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of talented model makers still out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, other than that, Steven, we've been hearing a little bit about this Pink Five coming back around.
Yeah, Pink Five.
And are you, for those out there that don't know what Pink Five is, could you give us a little explanation on that?
Yes, Pink Five is a Star Wars fan film that was made in 2002, kind of almost actually. It was made by a friend of mine, Trey Stokes, who's a visual effects supervisor and film director. And he kind of did it as sort of a joke. He was testing some green screen stuff out. And he got a friend of his, an actress, Amy Earhart, to put on a flight suit and a helmet. And they stuck a sticker on it that said Chicks Rule. And they made her Pink Five, very much like, you know, Red Five, you know, the attack of the Death Star. And what they did was they put a Valley Girl in an X-Wing fighter and showed you that the story that you thought you knew about Star Wars was actually a little bit different, because this character had a lot to do with the way things turned out. So it was a very short film. It's only like 4 or 5 minutes long. But a friend of his told him about the Star Wars fan film, contest. So he entered it, and lo and behold, he won. Part of the prize was that he got to remix it at Skywalker Ranch.
Wow.
And so the first one was a success, and he wasn't really thinking about doing a second one, but I think the folks at LFL said, hey, you know, are you thinking about doing a second one? You did such a great job with the first one, and all the fans were, you know, kind of like clamoring for it. So he decided to do, all right, well, I did Star Wars, so now I'll do one, but you know, kind of based on The Empire Strikes Back. And that's where he called me. He said, I've got a scene in here where I need to do Obi-Wan's voice. Would you mind doing a voiceover? And I'm like, sure, I'm a Star Wars fan. I'd love to do Obi-Wan. And then as the script started getting rewritten and growing in size, he said, how'd you like to do Obi-Wan on screen? And I'm like, oh, it's even better. So I did that on screen as Obi-Wan. And then that one won some awards too. It was very successful. And so he decided, well, I better do the third one, you know, Return of the Jedi. And in that one, he asked me to come back as Obi-Wan and as Emperor Palpatine. Ooh, so
dual role.
Nice. It was in there. That one became its own trilogy. He did that in three parts, and he never finished the third part. He had shot most of it.
Oh.
But he ran out of money. You know, he goes, I can't just, you know, spend all my time doing Pink Five. I have to go back to work. You know, of course, we had the downturn in the economy and so on and so forth. So, you know, things were just kind of, you know, didn't work out, and it just kind of sat in limbo. And last year, myself and my managers, Dutch and Kathy, contacted Trey, and we thought, you know, we'd love to see this finished, or have you ever thinking about doing anything with it? And he said, well, you know, as a matter of fact, I'd love to finish it, maybe get a Kickstarter going. So we helped him do a Kickstarter program and raised over $28,000.
Whoa.
Wow.
We were going to Long Beach Comic Con, and we talked to Long Beach, and they supplied their entire ballroom as the shooting stage for Trey to finish while we were at Long Beach Comic Con. So while we were there at Long Beach, he built, you know, part of the inside of the Death Star, and they had just, you know, the whole place was completely green screened out.
Huh.
So, you know, it was kind of quite an event to have that at Long Beach, and he finished it, and now he's finishing up all the post-production, and we're going to do a sneak preview for all the fans and 501st and Rebel Legion, everybody that donated costumes and personnel to make this thing happen. We're going to AllCon in Dallas on March 8th, 9th, and 10th, and we're going to sneak preview it there. And it's going to be the first time that the entire saga has ever been seen on the big screen instead of just on a computer. So.
Wow.
So there you go. That's the story of Pink Five.
Pink Five. So this will this just be for the 501st, or will this be open to anybody that goes to AllCon?
No, it's not going to be just the 501st, but it's going to be sort of a limited reserve seating thing. We want to make sure that all the people that had it were a part of it get a chance to see it first, and then the theater will open up to fill up for all the remaining seats. But the first sneak preview is definitely for all the fan organizations.
Oh, very good, very good. That's very cool. And this is at AllCon in Dallas. It's March 8th.
Yes, 8th, 9th, and 10th. And March 8th is when we're doing the big sneak, and we're going to have. Excuse me, what? Four to six.
Okay.
It's because we're gonna show it. The whole thing lasts just about a little over an hour when you string them all together, and then we're gonna do a panel afterwards and talk to the audience and kind of answer questions and all that good stuff.
All nice. Right. So I know we do have a few listeners out there in the Dallas area and across Texas. So hopefully our people can get there.
There's going to be lots of giveaways. We're going to have some goodies and freebies we're going to be passing out in the audience, so it'll be well worth it to come by.
Yes, yes. Now, are you going just for this, or are you going to be appearing throughout the weekend?
I'll be appearing throughout the weekend with some good friends of mine, Rick Fitz from Star Trek Next Generation, Mike Gregory, who was in RoboCop and Total Recall.
Yes.
Trey Stokes, of course, will be out there at the tables signing and greeting fans. Barry Corbin, who you guys might know from War Games and shows like mm-hmm. Northern Exposure, he's going to be there with us at our tables. And Vanessa Marquez, who is a huge Star Wars fan. She was also one of the cast members of ER, but she also has a cameo in the final chapter of Pink Five. Yes. There's a few cameos in there. Scott Allen, who's head of the Southern California 501st, he has a cameo in Pink Five as well, and he's going to be there with us, along with Nick Bishop, who is the public relations officer from the 501st from Tasmania, and Cody Glenn, who's head of one of the regions of Starfleet that's out in Texas. He's going to be joining us. And Kevin Ward, who's head of the Mando Mercs Clan Moran, which I am a member of in Texas, is going to be there with us. So we got a really big group. Who am I forgetting? Who am I?
Scott Allen's coming up.
Well, I mentioned Scott. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't miss that. Oh, don't forget the...
Who else? Oh. The list is so long here.
We got a bunch of friends that are threatening to come down and just hang out.
Yeah, well, we want to mention who the friends are that are threatening to come and hang out with. That'll be quite interesting if they show up. But yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. I've never been to AllCon before. I heard it's really wild con, so we're getting prepared.
Well, all right. I know that the finished Pink Fives most of those are on YouTube. So for those that are not able to go, go and check out. Just type in Pink Five on YouTube, and it'll bring up everything that's available to watch up there.
You'll have to do it quick because they're going to be coming down off of YouTube once the entire saga starts hitting the con circuit. That'll be the place to go see it. And part of the reason that's being done is because it really deserves to be seen on a movie screen and not just a computer screen.
Nice. So get there quickly. To check it out. And then if you see it popping around at different film festivals or comic conventions, definitely take the time, set aside the time of the day to go check it out. Because I have seen the first few episodes, and they are fantastic. You will not be disappointed.
I know. J.J. Abrams has a lot to live up to here. He's got a tough act to follow.
He's been taking notes. Yeah,
I'm sure he has.
And also for the listeners that hear this, please go over to Steven while he's over there and go up and say hi to him. Steven's a super nice dude. Chris and I met him at Celebration. We had a great time talking with him. We had a great time talking with his management, Dutch and Kathy, who you guys hear in the background there. Fantastic people. Go up there and say hi to Steven. Tell him that you heard him here on Star Wars in Character. It'll make us feel good because we won't be able to be there, but we'll be there in spirit through you guys. One last thing, Steven. I know you got a session, so we're going to keep this short. Chris and I, one of the reasons we wanted you to come on is because we really wanted to thank you and Dutch and Kathy. You guys were our first interview that we ever did. And I actually went back and listened to the original interview. And I know Facebook isn't really the measurement for fans, but when we were recording that interview, I remember we hit our 200th fan, and we are now at almost 1,400 fans.
Wow!
On Facebook, and you guys were our first interview. You guys have done a lot for us with that, and we did a little mini cast for a charity thing after that. And Dutch and Kathy also set us up with Anna Graves for an interview, and they put us in touch with Trey Stokes, which we haven't been able to schedule an interview with him at this point. But we wanted to thank you guys. You guys were the first ones that we were willing to sit down and talk with a bunch of newbies, and it's that you guys really got the ball rolling on us, and we had a very successful 2012. So we wanted to really thank you personally for all the help that you gave us early in our podcast.
Yes, thank you very much. I actually still have on my phone. I have the voicemail from Tarkin talking to my son Luke. I still have that on my phone.
Oh, that's you better save that because that's from Captain Tarkin. He's an admiral now.
Yeah, absolutely right.
You yes. know what? I did not even pick that up that he was an admiral on the mm-hmm. episode. Oh my goodness! I pride myself on picking things like that out. Oh, well.
Oh, you've got people with sharp eyes out there. They're looking at the badges and stuff that these officers wear, and it's like, oh, he got promoted.
You had a great costume on too for Celebration 6. You looked exactly like Target. How you stood, how you walked, how you glared at people. You were perfect.
Yeah, I think I scared a few of my castmates when I was walking around like that, stomping around in those boots. But you know, it's not hard to get into character when you put that uniform on. I'll tell you, it really does something. And you know, Admiral Tarkin now has his very first official patch. We're going to be Ooh. Bringing those with us to Alcon as well.
Nice.
Yeah,
I want one of those.
Yeah, they're pretty spiffy looking.
Okay.
Hop on a plane, Tim.
All right.
There you go. I think we can work something out.
Oh.
Hey, if as I've said, anytime you guys come to Tennessee, let me know. I'll take you out for an expensive steak dinner. That's maybe a hamburger.
We're looking forward to doing that sometime.
He might. All right. He might supersize it.
Yeah.
There you go. All right.
So thank you so much, Steve. And thank you, Dutch. Thank you, Kathy. Until the next time we talk, well, hopefully it won't be a year and a half, but until the next time we talk, thank you so much.
Great talking to you guys.
Take care.
You too. Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Star Wars in Character. Star Wars in Character is part of the NeoZaz.com network of podcasts. For more great podcasts and original entertainment, please visit www.neozaz.com. Star Wars in Character is not affiliated with nor endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox. Star Wars and all Star Wars universe characters, places, or Star Wars-related items are the copyright of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. Visit www.swic.neozaz.com for the latest Star Wars in Character episodes and information.